Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast, where you will get to listen in on the thought-provoking conversations with countercultural business, financial, and money thought leaders, sharing their wisdom and insights with your host, Christina Wise. Christina Wise is a highly successful serial entrepreneur, real estate investor, best-selling author, millionaire business and money coach, and the founder of the Wealthy, Wealthy brand. Christina has mastered the money game, and now her mission is to help everyone willing to do the work win the money game too. If you are looking to upgrade your financial life, stop worrying about money, and start living the fulfilling life you deserve, strap in, take a deep breath, and get ready to learn. This podcast will change the way you think about business, money, and wealth. Let's get into it.
Hi, and welcome back. This is Christina Wise. In this episode, I interview Rebecca Walser. Rebecca is recognized as a top 100 financial advisor in the U.S. Not only is she a certified financial planner, but she is also a tax attorney, and she's the number one best-selling author of her newest book, Wealth Unbroken. I know you're going to love Rebecca. She's brilliant, and her approach to money and finance is modern and unconventional. We talk about a lot of things when it comes to unconventional wealth building, but what Rebecca really does is warns people about the biggest threat of the 401k, the danger that most people are not aware of. She talks about how important it is to know your non-negotiable retirement number so that you can plan for it. And she shares the two biggest financial threats to keeping and building your wealth. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Rebecca Walser. Rebecca, I am really excited about our conversation today. Welcome to the Wealthy Wealthy Show.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, you are a woman after my own heart, girlfriend. You are a tax attorney, you're a financial advisor, you're a host of your own talk show. And what I love most in really researching you is that you really are passionate about an unconventional or countercultural, untraditional approach to money and finance. So I want to really dig into this because it's really hard to find. Mm-hmm. Pretty much all the planners, advisors out there are still stuck in this very old school, traditional advice that's just not applicable to today, to our financial goals and concerns today. So let's start out. When you talk about, or what is your definition of conventional? And then what, on the opposite side of that, what is unconventional when you're talking about conventional versus unconventional finance?
Great, great question. Excellent question to start with. So what I'll say is, and I just will preface this by saying, if you look at the history of America, it really wasn't until Social Security was written into law in 1935 that Americans started sort of changing their philosophy or their viewpoint on money. And it used to be that it was all up to us. Like everything we had and everything we were ever going to have was going to be up to us. But once Social Security was introduced, Americans now had this retirement program that they started to sort of look at as a retirement vehicle. And all of planning, the planning industry obviously didn't come into sophistication until later on, but all of planning now has, for the last 45, 50 years, incorporated Social Security as part of the plan. And so what has come about in a roundabout way is, what should we be doing to sort of supplement Social Security, as opposed to thinking of our own financial security on our own lap, and Social Security, if it's there or not, is sort of the bonus or the icing on top of the cake or the dressing or on the top of the sundae that we've already built. So conventional financial advice for the last 50 years has really been in that vein. And I would say for the last 30 years, it has been very specific and integrated with tax policy and basically building wealth in a pre-tax vehicle for the last 30 years. So that is what I would classify as conventional financial wisdom and advice.
So I love that. And I completely wholeheartedly agree with you. And that paradigm doesn't exist anymore. There's no such thing as pensions. There's no such thing as real retirement planning per se, especially since we're living a lot longer. And since those times are over, we're not in the same jobs. So with that, how do you fit, for example, the idea of a 401k into this world? Because I think, well, what I not just based on my own experience with the conversations I listen to with my customers and clients and followers, is there still that, should I be maxing out my 401k? What should I do with my 401k? And those are great questions, but I think behind that is still the idea that 401k is the strategy for retirement. So yeah. What do you say to example this thing called a 401k?
Oh gosh. Well, I could talk to you for the rest of the entire meeting today on just this one topic. Half of my book that I wrote, which came out in January of this year, is on the 401k, really pre-tax wealth building. And I have a unique perspective because I approach this as a tax attorney and a financial advisor, which I think is a really unique combination. So I am looking at this from the tax perspective. And the thing that really bothers me is if we go back again in time, and I like to preference everything in history because history is a predictor of where we're headed. And if we preface the 401k, it was written in 1978 in the Revenue Act, but it didn't really gain prominence until 1981. And if we stop and we rewind and go back to the future of 1981 for just a second, we see Ronald Reagan getting inaugurated in January of 81 when we only had $980 billion of federal debt. We have $22 trillion today. So we did not have a debt problem in the 1980s. We also look at the baby boomer generation, and they were only 16 years old to 34 years old. So nobody was thinking about, geez, what's going to happen 30 years from now when all of this generation retires en masse together? So those two problems were not on the radar. They weren't even in existence yet. And what you had was this philosophy come into being that said, listen, build your retirement bucket in a pre-tax account, because right now while you're working and you're earning, you're in your highest earning years. And that will put you in the highest bracket because we have a marginal graduated tax system. So don't pay the tax in your highest earning years on the money you're setting aside for retirement. Instead, defer that tax. Wait until you retire to pay that tax. And then when you retire, you'll be in a lower income bracket and therefore your taxes will be lower. And this was the actual belief system that existed. And it made sense in 1981 because of the factors that I just discussed in 1981. But you have to fast forward now from 1981 and now in 2018, 2019. What you see is Ronald Reagan in his second term basically redid the tax code. And that set off a precedent for the last 30 years where we have had, if you look at the history of America, we have had the lowest taxes for in all of American history, literally since before the 30s, in the period from 1987 through the present time. And in fact, now after President Trump's tax reform, we have the lowest taxes since FDR in 1930. So we have the lowest tax situation now. So right now everybody's feeling good and everything seems fine, except for the fact that, you know, you've heard the proverbial, we've kicked the can down the road. Now the can is at the cliff. And so what we have to now think about is what's happening. And all of these retirement dollars that we've been promised we pay lower taxes on are in fact going to cost us more than we ever could have imagined. And there's a very specific reason for that. Two reasons for that. One, $22 trillion of debt. We're getting to a point where we just cannot borrow enough. And two, the massive retirement of the baby boomers. Just to give you two quick facts to just give you the problem in a perspective, we are already at two full-time equivalent payers into Social Security for every one person on benefits. We reached that level in December of 2017. We weren't supposed to get to 2-to-1 until 2030 when the last boomer retired. We're already there. The problem with already being at a 2-to-1 payer-to-payee ratio in 2017 and beyond is that 70% of our baby boomers have not even begun to retire yet. And in four short years, beginning in 2022, 70% of the entire baby boomer generation will retire in a 5 to 6 year period. So what we have coming very soon now, less than 10 years, is a massive change of our tax code because it is going to have to be necessary with what needs to be paid out to these boomers and what is going to be collected with when we're already at 2-to-1.
Wow. Wow, that's a wake up. So go back to the 401k then. If that's not the best strategy, what are you advising people?
So to be clear on the 401k, the reason I'm not a fan of the 401k is because it is a pre-tax wealth builder. So all of your wealth in the future will be taxed in the future and therefore subject to future tax increases and subject to government control. And I'm all about controlling your destiny. And if we have all of our wealth in the account that the government really controls, we're not controlling anything. So I always advise people with regards to the 401k specifically, contribute to the match. We'd want you to take the free money because we'd have to order for money to not be worth taking. So contribute to the match. What I've seen a lot of people, a lot of companies are now matching Roth 401k contributions at the office. So your first and best choice would be to contribute to a Roth that can get a match. If you can't get a match from a Roth 401k, then contribute to the traditional 401k to the match. Once you've hit the match, do not contribute another penny to a pre-tax account on the IRA side, on the 401k side, because you understand something, and people do not think about this. They're just so conventionally trained to do this, they don't even think about what they're doing. When you contribute in 2018, 2019 to a 401k and an IRA, you are deferring paying the tax at the lowest it's been since the 1930s to say that you will pay it at some future unknown point. What we do know about the future is very, very ugly for the Treasury Department of the United States of America. And therefore, don't defer the lowest tax possible. Taxes are on sale now. In fact, what you should be doing is looking at converting what you've already built in pre-tax wealth into the Roth as fast as you can, because that opportunity will not see the light of day very much longer.
Wow, that is such great advice. Now, what about those that have switched jobs and have money sitting in an old 401k somewhere?
Absolutely. So what we would tell them to do, and it depends on their access, like if they need access before, like at 55, then if they keep it in the 401k platform, that will allow them to get access without a tax penalty. If they roll it to an IRA and need to access it before 59 and a half, they're going to have a 10% tax penalty. But what I will tell you is the best advice I can give people is to really start looking at all of these things, orphan 401k accounts, IRA accounts that maybe are old and they've done nothing with them, and start looking at a repositioning plan over a 5-year window, 7-year window of moving this money from 401 or IRA to Roth IRA. And this is a process, because we do pay the tax over that series of time, that we do want to plan out, strategize, and take a 5 to 7 year window to do it, because simply going to run out of great tax rates after that time.
Great. Now, what about those? A big portion of my listenership tend to be more business owners and entrepreneurs. So when it comes to financial planning and tax strategy, do you have advice that you would give on a more mass scale, like that would cover most everyone?
Absolutely. So when you're dealing with employed people, most of the time I find that they are phased out of contributing to a Roth directly. Because a Roth, if you're married, you're basically at $190,000, you can't do it. You can't make a direct contribution of earned income. So what we do, and the only other tax-free asset class that really exists in the code besides the Roth, is cash value life insurance. We've leveraged cash value life insurance for clients for hundreds of years in this country. The government isn't being altruistic by making insurance tax-free. If you think about what they're doing, in the event of if two kids, mom and dad, if the dad prematurely passes away, mom's got two minors and they have no private funds available, mom goes to the government, says, I need help with my children until they're adult, until they're, no longer minors, till the age of majority, 18 or 19. And the government does offer help in the form of Social Security benefits, as we know. So what the government has done is incentivize through the tax code private Americans to purchase and leverage insurance so that in the event of premature death, we don't become a number and relying on the government. So in this incentivization through tax policy, tax attorneys like myself that work with wealthy people have for hundreds of years leveraged the code to the best financial advantage of clients. And so a lot of people, the Rockefellers is a great example that comes to mind, really wealthy families over the course of American history have leveraged the tax code specifically geared towards life insurance to build wealth inside of life insurance, which is the basic equivalent of Roth kind of on steroids. There's no income limits. There's no amount that you, can't put in. There's no amount annual contribution limit. So we leverage life insurance, which is a huge, it's really a domestic legal tax shelter. It's the only one in the United States. Yeah.
Well, again, this is music to my ears, and you are so uncommon because you are one of the few that I've talked to that recommend life insurance as part of the financial strategy and wealth building and legacy strategy for that matter. And
Absolutely.
It's just not talked about in conventional finance at all. And I think it's a huge missing piece of the pie chart.
So it so is. And to be fair to the investment world, they can't compete with life insurance. It's, to be honest, you know, they basically have the volatility. The market goes up, the market goes down, it crashes, and they have no tax benefits to offer. The investment world is, it's a taxable, you know, you might have a qualified dividend, so you have a capital gain rate, or you might have taxable interest, but it's ordinary income. They don't have tax benefits outside of qualified dividends, capital gain rates that they can really offer us. So they don't even try to compete on the life insurance side because they know life insurance is just going to beat them hands down every day when it comes to taxation.
Excellent. So when it comes to even the word retirement, when I think about retirement in overall scope and financial design and a holistic design that exists outside of way outside of conventional planning, but even retirement is a small piece of the pie chart because there's a portion for retirement that is, that's just this, that's only, in my opinion, the tax strategy piece of overall wealth creation and being able to live off some type of earnings outside of working earnings at some future period of time. So, but I think, again, conventional finance has led people to believe that if they just put money in their 401k, that's going to be enough to sustain them for their 10, 20, 30, 40 years of life after they choose or wish to stop working. So outside of these more traditional vehicles, you mentioned life insurance, which isn't normally mentioned. What else do you like to see on the balance sheet? We have maybe a slice for tax strategy, retirement planning. We have a slice for insurance. Is there anything else that you recommend in more of a holistic type plan that as people are really working towards building their assets and building out that balance sheet, they'd want to see on as part of their pie chart?
Well, I do think, you know, Christina, over the history of America, one great inflation hedge has been and will always be real estate. So I do believe in also holding a small real estate portfolio. But I'm not a huge fan of, I find that people that go on the real estate side kind of become expertized in the real estate market, and that's all of a sudden now they're just in the real estate world. That's a big problem for retirement because that gives you perpetual, you know, landlordship, and you might not want that in retirement. You might want something that's more, you know, just, you know, passive cashless sensitive where you're not having to be called up in the mail to order the repairman to go out and change the toilet or whatever, fix the broken air conditioner. But I do think that, you know, you do need to have a diversified portfolio. I usually recommend having some part of the portfolio in the market, but only the amount that you can afford to lose. I look at the market a little bit differently in retirement because most advisors, and I am one, but most advisors really try to give you this theory, this this feeling of they can diversify away your risk of the market by basically allocating your assets or doing asset allocation models and then doing balancing on a more frequent basis. The truth is the market is risk and you should be prepared to lose whatever you have in the market, just as you should be prepared to gain, but you should be prepared to lose. And when you look at that portfolio from that perspective, once you're retired, it does start to limit how much we are able to have in the market at any one time. So I start to really break out what I call the non-negotiable number, how much of our total wealth portfolio are we not willing to risk loss on. And then from there, we kind of divide up that non-negotiable amount into various different asset class buckets that are outside necessarily of the market. So we have some money in the market, which is stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, any variation of a stock or a bond is what I call the market. And then real estate, life insurance, some of these alternative investments are definitely a full breadth portfolio, but not something that means, it doesn't mean that we're completely discounting the market offhand and not having anything in it. But certainly in retirement, we're so much more cash flow sensitive and loss sensitive that the market becomes a very big threatening world.
I just love that you said that. So is there a non-negotiable retirement number that you recommend?
Well, of course, it depends on that person's individual lifestyle. You know, everyone has a different lifestyle. I mean, your guy that's you know, a multimillionaire is going to have one number. The person who's made a good living at a career job, doesn't have a pension, but has built up wealth, his number might be something very different. The single mom who put her kids through school, who, you know, lived check to check her whole life, she might be happy on just Social Security and something else, a little bit something else, or maybe into Social Security. We have a lot of Americans that are going to just be on Social Security. So it's really hard to answer that question. But what I like to say is that if you just take 70% of your free cash flow on an annual basis for the last, you know, 15 to 20 years of your life, and obviously the ending years shall be the higher years, you know, I think if you go the goal would be to replace at least 70% of your available cash flow to make sure that you feel like you're sustaining lifestyle. Once we're cutting out more than 30% from our lifestyle, we start to feel like we haven't done a great job. We've kind of lost, you know, we've kind of downgraded lifestyle. So I often use meetings with clients and I'll say, listen, you're living up here. The retirement wealth now is going to give you a lifestyle down here. What we need to do in these last years before retirement is bridge this gap. We need to bring your current lifestyle down by funding more retirement, your lifestyle up in the middle. We'd like to see clients for the last 3 to 4 years of their life living almost exclusively on the budget that they're going to have for the rest of their life. It's just not realistic to take somebody and say, yeah, I'm making $150,000 a year, but when I retire, I'll be fine with 80. No, you won't. That's not how it works. So we really want to see this coming together. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I don't think many people want to go down in lifestyle. I mean, if we had our druthers, who wants to go down? And
nobody.
We want to go down as little as possible, but we're not, people aren't thinking that way. And I don't think they're factoring in. I think that there is a belief that the cost of living goes down when we're retired, but not necessarily. Healthcare costs go up. Other costs are going up. And we want more leisure time and travel. We're on vacation 24/7, as opposed to when we're working, we don't have as many opportunities to spend or enjoy the life. So again, I think that's such an important piece of advice, is to really think about the fact of, do you want your lifestyle to go down? And if so, by how much are you going to be okay? It's something to factor in when you're doing your long-term, your long-term planning.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned on your website and in the different material that I've seen that you're really concerned about two large financial threats that are on the horizon. Would you talk more to them?
Yeah, this is exactly what I wrote my entire book about. So it's the two main financial threats going back through. And my perspective is really unique because I have been in finance since 1996. So over 20 plus years I've been in finance. And then I became a lawyer probably 11 or 12 after being in finance. I went back to school, became a lawyer, and then practiced tax law exclusively. And then I did that and then I opened my own practice, and now I practice finance and tax law holistically together for clients. And so in the course of my, you know, history of career and span, I've been able to see the financial side and the tax side. And that's my book in a nutshell, the two main financial threats to not only building your wealth, but keeping your wealth the rest of your life, maintaining it the rest of your life, are twofold. The first is the volatility of the market. The thing that we have to realize on the financial side is market volatility is a wealth killer. And we don't realize that, and we don't focus on it when we're 30, 40. We just think, oh gosh, my portfolio tanked. And we call our advisor, and the advisor says, oh, but you know what? It's going to come back. It's going to, you know, it's a market-less cyclical. This is a long-term strategy. And we kind of listen to that. And we think, okay, fine, buy and hold. I'll stay and I'll hold. The problem with that in retirement is we can't afford that in retirement. In retirement, we have to be able to access our portfolio every single year for our lifestyle and our income. And so when the market corrects in retirement, we shouldn't be touching our portfolio. We should let it recover. The last recoveries took 5 years for the .com, for the S&P to return completely to what the pre-.com level was. And the Great Recession took 4.5 years. You've got somebody in retirement who's needing to access their portfolio. They cannot afford to go through the next correction. They just simply can't afford it. So volatility becomes the wealth killer. What I like to do, because I'm so mathematical and I like to prove as a lawyer everything I say, is I like to point people to looking at the S&P 500 just for the last two decades, the last 20 years. What we can show people mathematically is if you just eliminate the risk of loss out of the last 20 years and only get half of the upside, so you lose the risk of loss, but you only get half of the growth side, so no loss but half of the upside, you actually outperform the S&P 500 itself for the last 20 years. What this tells us is that it is the losses that kill our ability to maintain our wealth. So the first big threat is what I call the new normal of extreme high highs and followed by extreme low lows. It's the new normal of market volatility. And ever since the globalization of the world in the 90s with the invention of the internet and cell phone technology, we have had and we have been in this new normal. We will continue to be in this new normal. In October 3rd of 2018, we hit all-time highs again. And then you can see the volatility that preceded it that followed it October, November, and even in December. So we are in this new normal of volatility, and that is a problem for wealth building. That's the first problem. The second problem is the problem we talked about at the very beginning. It's this coming tax, you know, metamorphosis of the United States tax code. When you have your largest organic born population retiring, this is the largest organic transfer from worker and payer to recipient. And understand this, every time a person rightfully retires and goes into Social Security, they are a double negative to the federal budget. Double negative because right now they're paying in and contributing, so they're a positive. When they retire, they stop contributing, so they're the first negative because they're not doing anything. And then when they go on to Social Security and Medicare, they're starting to take from the system, rightfully so, but now they're a double negative. So every time somebody is doing that, it is a double negative. And we've got millions and millions and millions that will start to do that very, very soon here in, you know, 5 years. And so that shift, that demographic shift from worker to recipient is going to change our tax code to where it is unrecognizable. The CBO did a report in 2008 with exactly this analysis on their mind. And they basically let us know that the 10% tax bracket will probably have to go to 25%. The 25% bracket will probably have to go to around 60-something percent, and the highest bracket will have to go close to the high 80s, 88%. So we know that our tax code is going to be unrecognizable, and for all of America that has built wealth pre-tax, because that's what we've been told to do for the last 3 decades, these people, if they don't hear this message and reposition their money, are going to be paying the piper, and it's going to be very ugly.
Wow. Let's shift gears a little bit, and thank you for that. I mean, that is just, I mean, I hope everybody listening is really paying attention, because nobody is saying what you're saying. And there's this belief that everything's going to work out great in the end, and that this tax code can't change based on, you know, this belief that taxes will be lower later on. So, but let's switch gears, and just to take a little advantage of the tax side of your background, when it comes to taxes, and let's say, well, let's break it up into business ownership and business, and then just personal. What sort of tax advice do you like to offer? Where do you think small business owners are making the biggest tax mistakes, and that actually carries over into their personal life, of course, because small business is more or less the same. Your business and your personal life are very much interconnected. There's not a big differentiation between the two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really broad question to answer. But what I will say is that what we have is some opportunities with this new tax code from this 2017. And specifically, what I'm talking about are the S-corporation pass-throughs that allow us to now write off 20% of income as long as they're not in a restricted or a, you know, unallowable working. Like I, as a lawyer and as a financial professional, I'm disallowed. Medical professionals are disallowed. A lot of professionals are disallowed. But for the rest of the country that has got an S corporation as a pass-through, a partnership as a pass-through, we can do this 20% write-off of gross revenues. And so that's a great opportunity. Some people have misconstrued that this year. This is one thing I've seen, is that because the corporate tax rate has been lowered from 35% now to 21%, a lot of people have thought, well, maybe I should make my business a corporation, a C corporation. And I think that's a big mistake, because what they're not realizing is that that is a double tax scheme. So even though the tax scheme has gone from 35% to 21%, it is still a double tax scheme, meaning that you will pay tax at 21% at the corporate level before the distributions can be funneled out to you as a person, at which point you will pay at the personal level additional tax. So it is still a double tax scheme, even though the corporate C corporate tax rate has been lowered from 35 to 21. So that is not a winning strategy for the most part. You'd have to run the numbers, but for the most part, I would think that's the case. So, you know, probably the biggest mistake that business owners make is, especially if they're running their business and it's their business and they're, you know, they don't have this really corporatized structure, which a lot of small business, medium-sized businesses don't, is you just don't want to, you don't want to basically do any kind of activity which what we call could pierce the corporate veil, or basically make it like you're commingling or using your professional bank account for your personal expenses. Because when that happens, then you have some, you know, and obviously this doesn't, you're not going to, no one's going to know this unless that you have a case, the IRS has a case or whatever. You have to be, this has to be found out. But I still would just caution people to just keep their business expenses in the business and their personal expenses separate, because the commingling can cause, you know, the IRS to question the status of the business as an actual business.
And are there any red flags that would really jump out that, whoa, this looks like it's a personal expense on the business books?
Yeah, I think, you know, grocery shopping, having your groceries taken out every single week from your business debit card, unless you have a team or an office that you're feeding lunch for every single day, that's kind of a little bit of a red flag. You know, that's kind of a common one. A lot of just using that business card swipe for a personal expense is, you know, you just want to try as best you can to keep your personal expenses on the personal side and, you know, to actually just give yourself a distribution or a payment or, you know, even a loan and a reimbursement so that you're keeping this expenses separated. And I think that's just really general great advice for business owners.
I love it and I agree. All right. We are coming to the close, the wrap up of our time together. And there's a couple final questions I would like to ask you. The first question is, I like to do some myth busting. I really like breaking conventional thinking because I think it keeps a lot of people trapped in beliefs that just are no longer applicable in this modern age we live in today. So is there any myth out there that you would like to bust that you bump into all the time?
Yeah, the 401k. The 401k would be my number one myth buster. I mean, it's just so ingrained into our society, you know, Christina. It's just so, everyone just believes in this product because it's all they ever hear about, you know. And it's just a losing proposition. If you just stop and think about what you're doing beyond the match of getting free money, you're deferring taxes now for an ugly, ugly tax future later. And I hate that so many people still talk about it. I actually think that it's going to be borderline malpractice. I think a lot of people are going to look back and go to their advisors and say, why did you tell me to do this? Wasn't it obvious that this is what was going to happen? How could you not know this for the last 10 years? And yet this is still the conventional advice. So I would just really encourage your entire listenership that the 401k and any pre-tax wealth building, which includes the IRA, the 409a, you know, any kind of deferred anything, needs to really be substantially questioned in 2018 and beyond.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. One final question. Wealthy is breaking conventional thinking in both the money wealth category, but the health wealth category as well. And my background has been real estate. It's been wealth building. It's been wealth. It's been all in the money business and wealth creation side. Now, that worked really well because what I did is I traded my health for wealth for a couple of decades in that growth period. I found out that, sadly, I found out that my body's my number one asset, that all that money, the wealth, the success really had no meaning or if I didn't have my health. So now that's where wealthy is. Our body is our number one asset. And I even show on it's part of portfolio or the balance sheet that our health wealth needs to be factored in there as well. And we need to be investing in our health. But I'm curious, as someone that's in the money and business side of the equation, what is your philosophy on health wealth?
Well, it's so funny because I have clients that are, of course, you know, older, have already built their portfolio, their wealth side, and they're coming in and we're figuring out plans for the rest of their life. And a lot of times, you know, that it has been at the sacrifice of health. And what I can say to you is that it's kind of a common theme of we spend, you know, our health building our wealth, then we turn around and spend our wealth to regain our health. And it doesn't work. You're 100% right. This is so true. That, you know, there is nothing, and I've been through it with my practice, there is nothing more important than your loved ones, and there is nothing more important than the health in the world. If you're going to die because of sickness tomorrow, who cares, right? So my philosophy is to try your whole life to maintain the balance between making sure your body is a priority, and it's a struggle for me because of the hours I work, and eating healthy is a challenge with that, and exercising religiously is a challenge with that. But you have to, you know, just like investing is a discipline and finances, investing in your health is a discipline. And what I've seen is if people don't do that, then they're going to pay the price. They're, you know, the chicken will come home to roost. You will owe the money on that bill, your body and your health. And if you don't make it a religious practice, it will come home to roost. And one of the greatest ways that this is seen is if you get to the point where we want to leverage, you have built wealth and we want to leverage maybe life insurance like we talked about, it can't get you insured. You're uninsurable because of some kind of health issue. So there is a perfect example of where health comes right back into the wealth picture. And obviously, if you know you built several million dollars up and you retire, and then you have a health situation that the traditional advice is to, you know, do this route or that route, and you decide, you know, that route doesn't look very good. It looks like it's pharma medicine and it's just going to make them richer, but not my health has suffered. So you want to do something alternative. You've got to pay for that, self-fund that. So you've got to have the money there to self-fund it. But, you know, it's just all combined. It's all interrelated. So I think that it's so important to, I love that you have the holistic focus on not just wealth, but also health, because it's so true. I've seen it in my practice many times.
I bet you have. Well, Rebecca, you've been just a wealth of information in this and these 30 minutes. So thank you so much for being here. And I just wanted to help spread your word because it's so important for everyone to hear. So thanks again for your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.